to order. Welcome to committee, Senator Dahl. I guess we're going to start with Senate File 2927.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Actually, this is the first time I've been before this committee, which, not because I'm not, you know, working with veterans. I'm just doing it in the district, you know, doing programs and bring people together. But I haven't had a bill to bring to before the committee, so today I do. Just to get started, if I could, I have an amendment, and I've asked Senator Scogin if he would move the amendment for me.
Mr. Chair, I move 2283.
Senator Dahl, we're going to pass the amendment out. Is this the first stop for this bill?
Yes.
Senator Scogin moves the 2283 amendment to get the bill in the order the author wants. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Amendment's adopted.
Thank you, Mr.
Chair.
Senator
Dahl.
Quickly go through this. I think it'll only take a couple of minutes. This bill is an initiative of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. They're requesting these changes to provide some technical clarifications to the Veterans Preference Act, as well as to make some slight modifications to the section of law that relates to when hearings are held before an administrative law judge. You'll see in Section 1 that basically there's some minor technical changes to reference the Veterans Preference Act. Specifically, it clarifies that the petitions is to now to be submitted via U.S. Postal Service. Contain the veterans and other affected parties' phone numbers, to have a notarized signature of the veteran, and to include a copy of the veteran's DD-214 or separation or discharge papers. In Section 2, you'll see that it clarifies that petitions must be completed before it is served on all agencies and persons named. And then in Section 3, it clarifies that the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs will now schedule a hearing to be held within 120 days of being served with the completed petition, whereas the current statute called for a hearing within 20 days. And to give just a little more clarification, I'm going to turn over the remainder of this presentation over to Veteran Affairs Deputy Commissioner Mike Poole-Geese. Did I say that right?
Very close.
We'll go with that. Easy. We'll explain in more detail why they're requesting these changes.
Mr. Puglisi.
Mr. Chair, members, Michael Puglisi, Deputy Commissioner, Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Thanks for having us here today. You know, as you're aware, many of the laws and regulations under 196, 197 are quite old, so periodically we need to update them, bring them up to the 21st century, and that's really what we're doing with this bill here today. The most significant change that we're making is the requirement that a hearing be conducted within 20 days. We have not been able to meet that commitment because we don't control the...
Could we have a little quiet in here? I'm having a difficult time hearing. Thank you. Mr. Puglisi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I was saying, the major change with this bill is changing the requirement that we get a hearing scheduled within 20 days. We don't control the Office of Legislative Hearings, so we can't really control their schedule, and it's impossible to meet that deadline. What we do control is the scheduling, but not the holding of the hearing. So what we would like to do is change the language to reflect that we will schedule a hearing to be conducted within 120 days. That is very doable. It doesn't put things out too far. It gives both parties enough time to get everything together that they need to present their claim. And there is a possibility that even though we say we're going to schedule it within 120 days, it still might not take place in that 120 days because both parties, the employer and the employee, can delay that if they choose to. So what we want ownership of is what we can control, the scheduling of that, and that's all that this language is doing.
Thank you. Questions, members? Seeing none, is there anyone that would wish to testify in opposition to this bill? Seeing none, Senator Scogin moves that Senate File
2927
as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the floor.
So moved.
Any questions, members? Thank you. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Bill's passed. Thank you, Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, it's a pleasure to be before your committee.
Senator Olson. Senate File 1657. Welcome to the Ag and Vets Committee, Senator Olson.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. And I have in front of you Senate File 1657, which was a bill that was introduced last session. And some of you may have heard this bill already when it passed through the two environmental committees and may recollect. And so I'm not sure exactly how full your schedule is in terms of how much time you want to give me in going kind of walking you through the bill. But I can tell you very generally that the bill is a broad concept, but it does not predetermine any particular outcomes. The bill is one that takes all of our agencies that have some jurisdiction over natural resources management, and as well as inviting local government and citizen participation to sit down at the table over a period of 2 years and come back to the legislature ultimately with some recommendations about how we have natural resources aligned, our natural resources management aligned in our state. This is something I think probably many of us, most of us here who are rural legislators can relate to, that we have, I'm guessing I'm not alone, in having had multiple contacts over the years from constituents who are sometimes confused about where to go, whether it's for permitting or other issues like putting together a lake management plan, dealing with invasive species issues. I mentioned permitting, but there's a whole host of interactions that are required by state law, and a lot of confusion about where to turn for guidance or who's required to, where you're required to get a permit, that type of thing. And there's also an awful lot of redundancy in terms of the jurisdiction for managing natural resources management. Some of that redundancy happens between state agencies. For example, in dealing with lake associations in my district, I talked to many when I carried the Star Lakes legislation, and some lake associations were getting help putting together a lake management plan from someone at the county level. Some were getting help from Bowser. Some were getting help from the DNR. Some were hiring independent contractors. But I guess the point is that there wasn't a single resource where people knew that's where they should go, and there was an awful lot of overlap in responsibilities among these different governmental organizations, because in different areas, depending on who happened to take an interest, that tended to be who was helping in that particular situation. I saw this as well when I spent a couple of days at an invasive species workshop in Duluth. It was a valuable workshop, but it was there were representatives from a host of different agencies within the state with not necessarily a comprehensive direction of where we were going to deal with this particular issue. In the last couple of years, with the budget constraints that we've had, we've been hearing a lot from constituents about the need to take a look at how we deliver government services in the 21st century. And because this is one area of government delivery of services that is brought to my attention most often by constituents in my area, this was the place where I happened to start with looking at how we could put in process a system for reevaluating this. We had some really in-depth testimony last year from someone in my district who talked about the fact that we have we created state agencies kind of in a piecemeal fashion based on the need that was identified at that time. And I think of the big natural resources management agencies. First, I think we had the DNR, and then Bowser, and then the PCA, as the need for addressing different issues evolved. But we didn't really look at this in a comprehensive way at the time. It was kind of a stacked on top of each other type of approach. And so the idea is to go back to the drawing board and look at this without predetermining any outcome, and to have broad citizen participation and other stakeholder group participation, and then to try to meet some particular goals that are listed beginning on page two or on line 2.20. We're looking at, and I think there may be some, well, I know that there are a couple of amendments that are going to be offered to one amendment that would expand the scope of, or perhaps change a little bit, the administrative personnel part of this. But the idea would be where there is actual redundancy identified, particularly at the managerial level, to try to reduce that redundancy and overlap. Another goal would be to have more accountability to the public.
Senator Olson, are you moving on to discussing the A2 amendment at this point?
Not in part, Mr. Chair, so if we wanted to offer that amendment.
Is that one of your amendments, Senator?
The A2 amendment,
Mr. Chair. The A3 at some point.
And I think Senator Chaudhry has the A2 amendment. And so this, if you would like to address that now, Mr. Chair, there's part of that language is incorporated in this discussion.
Well, Senator Olson, I was listening to you, and I think you were kind of moving in. Maybe we should vote on the A2 amendment. And Senator Chaudhry, can you help us with what the amendment does? Or Mr. Knopf.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the three things that the A2 amendment does. One, it adds a person representing tribal governments to the group. It's part of the governor's appointments. And then it also changes, instead of administrative, as Senator Olson was just talking about, it includes the term redundant management. So instead of reducing administrative costs of operating these agencies, but reduce the redundant management of the agencies. The other thing it does is there were a number of places in here. This is a bill from last year that had some dates in regard to 2009 and 2010. So those dates have all been updated to reflect the current year.
Thank you, Mr. Knopf. Senator Chaudhry, do you want to
move the A2?
Senator Chaudhry moves adoption of the A2 amendment. Discussion, members? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Amendments adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Olson.
So then picking back up on page 2, line 2.22, consolidation of project permitting functions would be one of the goals. Again, I've been hearing from constituents, whether individual citizens or businesses or even local governments, that oftentimes they don't understand why they're getting permits, sometimes four or five permits that seem to be addressed, if not to the same thing, a very related requirements. And it's not just an expense issue, but it's a confusion issue. Sometimes people have thought that they'd gotten all the permits that were required, only to find out after the fact that they're getting a fine because there was a particular permit that they missed. Or they've been midway into construction on something and have to hold up the project for long periods of time simply because, again, there was a permit that they missed that they didn't realize even needed to be that they needed to get. And so, again, the idea would be to try to simplify this process. It doesn't necessarily reach any foregone conclusions. It doesn't necessarily state there would be a single permit for everything, but it addresses the goal of trying to reduce that and make it less confusing. The next several criteria are a bit related. But the idea there, professionalism in provision of services, reduction in political influence in the process, enhancing public participation and interaction with the public, and basically what we're looking at there is making sure that there is both the reality and the perception that there's a uniform delivery of how we're managing natural resources, and that we are making sure that the goals that we have within management are carried through and that everyone is treated the same way through the process, because, again, that's been part of the of the concern that has been expressed by constituents. Alignment of services to meet current and expected future needs. Again, making sure and using new technology. Those two things are related, but that we have some long-term planning in the process and that where we can use technology. One of the things that was raised at meetings very, very often, and Senator Chaudhry held a couple of meetings during the interim that he may want to speak with that weren't specifically addressed to this bill, but did have to do with the concept of natural resources management and things that could be done to improve that. And I think some of you actually even came to Bemidji, and I know there was another meeting in another part of the state. But one of the things that was discussed is often that we have different jurisdictions that follow boundaries like county boundaries or other kind of artificial boundaries that have to do with government and how we've set up government, but don't necessarily work the best for looking at things like watershed districts and finding out how, for example, Leech Lake, I believe I was told, has 11 separate governmental jurisdictions managing that one body of water with not necessarily any particular means of making sure that they're not working at cross purposes or that they're coordinating and communicating. So once again, the idea doesn't predetermine that we're going to necessarily do anything in terms of those 11 agencies, but that they would be at the table talking about how a realignment might help to reduce some of those redundancies, help improve communication, and ultimately help to improve the ultimate goal of effective environmental management. The reduction in overall personnel, again, the public is asking us to at least be looking at this. There are some areas, I think, within natural resources where we have a shortage of people. I mean, in delivering forestry services, I'm told that if we had more people on the ground, we could be working better with the forestry industry. So it isn't necessarily saying we should reduce. I think where we want to focus is where we have the upper-level management redundancy and perhaps free up some dollars to have some of those extra people on the ground where they're needed. The structure of this, basically, there is another amendment that I worked with Senator Vickerman about. Senator Vickerman was very concerned, and I think rightfully so, that those organizations, interests representing our farming communities, and I think that's why this bill primarily is here, had representation at the table and would be included in the discussion in a way to make sure that their interests are and concerns are met and addressed. And so I believe that Senator Scogin has an amendment that was worked through with him and Senator Vickerman.
Senator Olson, I think we'll pass out the A3 amendment. It's already in the packet. Everybody has that. Senator Scogin.
Mr. Chair, I move the A3, and Senator Olson hit it right on the head. This is in regards to Section 1, which is going to create this Environment and Natural Resources Organizing Advisory Committee, and a lot of the stakeholders in agriculture really felt that there was a chance that they could be missed, although there is some opportunity to get in added to that advisory committee. This is going to assure that they have a voice at that table, and I think it'll give them some comfort.
Chairman, one technical amendment.
Senator Scogin, Mr. Knopf tells me there is a technical amendment to the A3 amendment. What do you got, Mr. Knopf?
Mr. Chair, it also lists a number in there of 18, and this is now expanding it to 26. So it would be page 1, line 15, delete 18, and insert 26.
So the A3 amendment with that technical change.
Senator Scogin incorporates that.
Discussion, members. Senator Dill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, I've been doing the arithmetic here, and we're expanding this task force from 18 to 26. And sometimes when you get a lot of people in one place, it makes it harder to make decisions. And out of the 26 members, there are 13 that are identified as to where they're going to come from if this amendment passes. And, of course, the eight farm organizations are listed on the amendment under consideration. In the existing bill, there's five other positions that are required. When the Senate makes their appointments, they must appoint somebody that represents city government. When the House makes their appointments, they must identify somebody that represents county government and tribal governments. And then when the governor makes his appointments, he must appoint somebody representing the soil and water conservation districts and one representing watersheds. So that's a total of five required categories of people identified and appointed. So you add the five to the eight in this amendment before us. That gives us 13 required appointments and 13 that are kind of open. But I'm just letting you know what I think some people may look at. There's no representative from township government, and I imagine the environmental groups are probably going to think they should have some identified that would be appointed here. And so I'm going to support the Scogin amendment, but I'm just pointing out that before long there's going to be some more groups that are probably going to want to be identified and be added to the list. And pretty soon you get such a big list of people that it's going to cost more money, and it's just going to be harder to make decisions. So,
well, and
just an observation.
And Senator Dill, I think that the discussion that was taking place as these amendments were being drafted and worked on was that these members would be in the 18-member group, not an expansion to a 25-member group. Is any Senator Scogin or Senator Olson? Do you have any thoughts on whether this is, from my perspective, I think Senator Dill makes a really good point about the size of the group, and perhaps these should be included in the 18-member group, not an addition to the 18-member group.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Senator Dill,
if we go to 18, then you've got eight out of the 18 that are from farm organizations, and that I think a lot of people might consider that's a little bit on the heavy side. Now, we're in the Ag Committee, so we think that's great. But it may not look that great to the next committee.
Well, and Senator Dill, this is the first time I've looked at this amendment, but on the other hand, you know, a vast part of the land that these organizations regulate is farmland. And mm-hmm. So, you know, we'll have to think about that, too. Senator Olson.
Well, Mr. Chair, as far as I know, the amendment, and I wish Senator Vickerman was actually here, but as far as I know, the amendment, and maybe Mr. Knopf can speak to this, that the amendment as it stands was worked through with Senator Vickerman's office. So perhaps Mr. Knopf can speak to that. But the other thing that I would just like to emphasize is that I think it was important that we heard at the committee hearings and elsewhere that we allow, this would be a very big undertaking, and it's really important to have as many voices at the table as possible. And this task force creates some sub-working groups and has the authority to appoint additional people to those working groups to address one kind of separate the issue of if you were going to realign the employer-employee aspect of this and kind of the technical issues related to how you'd address that and the idea of the realignment within tasks and how to address that. But it's assumed that there's going to be some very broad-based participation and that would be encouraged. But I also think the thing to remember is that any recommendation that comes forward from this group is simply that. It's a recommendation back to this body, back to the legislature, for the legislature to then consider and decide what to do, you know, whether to approve it as exactly as it stands or whether to take that recommendation and make adjustments. But the idea is not to favor a particular group over another, but to bring as many voices to the table as possible to try to work out a plan that we can get stakeholder support behind. I mean, not saying the change is ever going to be accomplished without any angst on anyone's part, But the idea is not to circumvent or go around any particular group, but try to find a uniform proposal.
Senator Dill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, my experience with these kinds of groups is it's very helpful to have one minority and one majority party member from each body on a task force so they can listen to all the debate and soak in all the information and then come back to the legislature with a bill that they'll be chief authoring, and they'll have the knowledge base to do a pretty good job of it. And so that's a key part of what's missing on this task force. There really should be four legislators on it.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Olson.
This is going next, assuming it passes here, if it does, to state and local government. And if Senator Dill would like to put together an amendment with me to that effect, I would be happy to. I'm not sure if Senator Dill sits on that committee, but I would consider that a friendly amendment. I really think the important thing is to have all of us participate in the language that goes into this and to make it as comprehensive as possible.
And Senator Olson, could I ask Senator Chaudhry, you chair the Environment Policy Committee, what do you think of this discussion we're having? You're a member of the Ag Committee also.
Mr. Chair and members, we had a lengthy hearing on Olson's bill last session, and the committee passed it. It was a discussion over the overall need to relook at the way we manage our natural resources and at the very least coordinate our natural resource management, whether it be in terms of permitting our water resources, wildlife game management issues, all of it. It was, we felt that we need to step back and take a holistic look at it and see what we can do better. That's been the subject of two of the hearings that I've had during the interim, and we're going to have more, is to take a holistic look at what we can do better in natural resource management. I don't think I have the answer on what to do, what we can do better, and I don't think any one of us can invent a better system of natural resource management. But as Senator Olson has suggested in her bill, all of the stakeholders, the people who are affected, and who believe that we can do better, is what we have discovered, should get together and put their heads together and come up with the ideas perhaps we've been thinking about all along and not had the opportunity to advance, or what new ideas come forward in improving the way we manage this area. So I think we ought to, and that's why Senator Olson asked me to sit at the table with her, is because in the Environment Policy Committee, we've been talking about what we can do better, and hearing from stakeholders and the people of Minnesota on what we can do. And that's the process that Senator Olson seeks to set up here.
Senator Scogin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Senator Dill's concerns about the environmental perspective, I just point to line 1.26 from the period, and then on through line 2.3, where we talk about all advisory committee appointees shall have experience, expertise in science, policy, practice of environmental protection. And so if they do their due diligence as they appoint these advisory members, we should get that environmental perspective.
And Senator Scogin, what's your intent with this amendment, to have an 18-member committee or a 25-member committee?
Well, I, Mr. Chair, I would agree that the bigger it gets clumsy sometimes, but I think in its infancy, the more perspectives we have early on might be the case. So I would be inclined to leave it at 26 for now, I guess. But, I know Mr. Michaels worked closely with the chairman on constructing this, and maybe I did not ask Senator Vickerman about that specifically.
Well, Senator Scogin, I think, and I hate to speak for the chair, but my inclination and my recollection is that he was thinking about an 18-member committee. But what are the rest of the members? Any other discussion on this? Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, smaller is better. I agree with yourself and Senator Dill. I think it could easily be 12.
Senator Erickson-Rhodes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would disagree with Senator Murphy, and sometimes it's not the number, it's who needs to be at the table. You know, sometimes it's 8 organizations, and sometimes it's 40 people. If you're going to exclude people just because you're trying to get at a number target, you risk the credibility and outcome of all the work that they put into it. So I know it's a little vague, but I think the number needs to be the right number, and that's based on who's going to be affected by the decision. If you're going to be affected by the decision, you need to have a representative at the table.
And, Mr. Knopf, if we were to have this amendment, a change to this amendment that would have it be an 18-member committee versus the current draft of 25, what would the amendment be?
Well, Mr. Chair, it depends on how you want to do it, because the original bill had 6 from each, the Senate, the House, and the governor. These members are not appointed by the Senate, the House, or the governor. They basically select their own representative for the organization to sit on this panel. And, I mean, there's a couple ways you could do it, but you would have to, one way would be to reduce the number of public members appointed by the Senate, you can't really do it equally because that would have to be in threes and 8 isn't divisible by 3. So it'd be difficult to fit in. When I was given the task of putting this amendment together, it was not clear whether it was within or outside of the 18, and it seemed to fit better by doing it outside of the 18, because these members would be I wasn't given direction on who was supposed to appoint them or whatever, so I just put it together where they just appoint their own representative to the org. We've had other groups like this where a member of an organization is just appointed by the organization to be represented on that group, and so that was how it was done. So to get this down to 18, you would have to reduce the number of public members. In fact, the governor, you'd have to reduce one of the groups by 2 and 2 of them by 3 or some combination thereof. So it wouldn't be an equal number then appointed by the governor. You could make it a 19-member group by reducing the number of members of each of the public members of the groups. I think if you did that by 2, well, I guess it would be 20 members. So if you reduce it by 2 each, so it would be 4 public members appointed by the Senate, 4 by the House, and 4 by the governor, and then added this onto it, you would get to 20.
And I don't know, we don't have a motion yet here, but from my thought on this, I guess I think we'd take the Senate and the House to 3 because they're going to get minority and majority members from the discussion that I had earlier.
Mr. Chairman, these are not members of the legislature. These are public members.
Didn't we have some discussion committee about whether a minority and a majority member of the legislature would also serve on this committee? Senator Dale.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, the discussion was that there is nothing in this bill that says that any member of the legislature will be part of this decision-making process. And my experience has been that the best way to do it is have a majority and minority party member from each body, House and Senate, on this kind of a task force so they can listen to all the debate month after month, understand the issue frontwards and backwards, and then come back to the legislature and chief author the legislation that it's going to take to make the possible changes that they're going to recommend. And so if you add 4 more members from the legislature, that, of course, adds to the number of people, or it depends on how you do it here. Right now, if you go to the 26 members, which is what it would be with the Scogin Amendment, you're identifying exactly 13 on who they have to be, and then it still leaves 13 open, where there's no discussion yet as to who they're going to be. So the 4 legislators could be part of the 26. And then you would have clearly identified 17 as to who they're going to be, and it leaves you with 9, I guess, that are kind of open. And you're going to, certainly going to have some environmental organizations that are going to want to be part of this. And it's a little hard for me to understand why we'd appoint people from city government, tribal government, county government, but not appoint somebody from the legislature. So I guess what I'd like to do at this time is ask Mr. Knopf to prepare an amendment so that we can add four members of the legislature to this group.
Well, Senator Dill, and so we'll end up with a 30-member committee?
26.
What do you, Senator Olson?
You know, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm fine with whatever the will of the committee is. I think Senator Dill makes a good point, and I've seen that with other groups as well, that having the continuity back to the legislature with someone who's been involved is a good idea. And I also think that that large committees, I know, are large, but this is a very big undertaking, and if we have it's more important to make sure that we have as many groups' voices at the table. So maybe there's a compromise. You know, maybe what we could do is reduce an appointment by one or something of each of the groups, that between the governor, the House, and the Senate, and then add the numbers that, or add the people that Senator Dill is proposing, and try to keep it down to you know, a somewhat reasonable level. But whatever the committee's wish is fine with me.
Any other discussion? Senator Dill, are you offering an amendment to the Scogin Amendment, which is on the table?
Well, Mr. Chair, members, I'm just doing the arithmetic that Senator Olson was talking about by reducing the number of members for each of the appointing groups, Governor, House, and Senate, from 18 down to 15. And then we add in the 8 that Senator Scogin is adding. That gets us up to 23, of which 13 are clearly identified. And if you add the 4 legislators, that's 17 clearly identified. So that leaves 5 that are open for some environmental organization or somebody else to be added. I think, Mr. Knopf, are you working on an amendment for me?
Yes.
Okay.
As Mr. Knopf works on that, any other discussion, members? Mr. Knopf.
Mr. Chair, if I'm understanding what Senator Dill wants to do, to keep it at 26, but that because each the Senate and the House would be appointing 6 total members, it's just that 2 of those members would be members of the legislature from the House and the Senate. So you would have the Scogin Amendment, and then you would also add on page 1, line 18, delete 6, insert 4. After the semicolon on page 1, line 19, you insert a new 2, clause 2, 2 members of the Senate appointed by the Senate Subcommittee and Committees of the Committee on Rules and Administration. And then on line 1.20, delete 6, insert 4, and then a new clause 4 after we'll just get rid of the and. Actually, after the semicolon, this works out fine. After the semicolon in line 1.20, we insert a new clause 4, and we insert 2 members of the House. 2 members of the House are representative appointed by the Speaker. And then on line 1.21, we delete 3 and insert 5. So we should have the same total number of members, because we've got the public members from the House and Senate down to 4 each. And then they would be members. And then also on line 1.25, we would add a sentence after the period: at least one member of the House of Representatives and one member of the Senate must be from the minority caucus.
Okay.
Senator Dill moves to amend the A3 amendment, which will result in a 26-member board. There will be 4 members from the legislature, 1 of each party from the House and the Senate. These listed ag organizations will be listed, and there will be 5 members less to be appointed from the public.
Yes.
Does everybody understand the Dill amendment? Discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Amendments adopted. The Scogan Amendment as amended. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Amendments motion prevails. Amendments adopted. Senator Olson, we have Senate File 1657 as amended. Discussion committee.
See that guy's name?
Yep. Anyone in the audience who wants to testify in opposition to Senate File 1657? Seeing none. Senator Hamm.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I have a question, and I got here a little bit late, and I hope I didn't miss any testimony on this, but I'm looking at this part of the bill. It's Section 3 at the bottom of page 3 and over on page 4, where it talks about this task force will be considering powers and duties from other agencies, and I'm looking particularly at the Department of Agriculture, where it talks about regulation of fertilizer, pesticide control, so forth. And in the makeup of the task force, it doesn't seem that there's a it talks about the need for people on the task force to have experience or expertise, science, policy, or practice, protection, conservation, preservation. It doesn't really talk about the business of agriculture component that might apply to some of these issues. And so if you're going to create a task force to govern these things, but you're not going to take into consideration the practical use of these things that might apply to the business of agriculture, would that not have a bearing on the decisions that this task force would make? And I'm just wondering about that, and I don't know if the department has any comment on that, but it just seems to me that we may be missing something here if we're trying to...
Senator Hamm, before I go to Senator Olson, I just, draw your attention to the list of ag organizations. Certainly the Agri-Growth Council has a specific business focus, and, these other growers association, I'm assuming, are going to be represented by farmers. Mr. Knopf.
Yeah, just a technical thing, too, just to mention to Senator Hamm. Mr. Chairman, Senator Hamm, if you look at the A3 amendment, it says one member representing each of the following organizations selected by the organizations. These are not appointed by a public entity. So when it says all appointments to the shall have the experience, those would be the people appointed by the Senate, the House, and the government.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Knopf. I didn't see that in the amendment. Appreciate that.
Mr. Chair, I was just going to say, and I was going to reiterate, and I just think maybe Senator Hamm, because of when he came in, didn't actually see the A3 amendment. So I think it's
– yep, I don't want to
– okay.
Thank you. Any other discussion, members? No one speaking in opposition? Who moved this? Senator Chaudhry moves passage of the Senate File 1657 as amended and referred to the state and local government. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails, and then the bill's passed.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members.
Sure.
And Mr. Chair, our Senator Vickerman, I just want to take a time to quickly especially thank Senator Vickerman for working with me and the ag community on the bill. Thank you, Senator Vickerman.
Senator Erickson Robes, are you?
Mr. Chair and committee members, I just want to make a little announcement for later on in the agenda. It's not on the agenda, but I think people have heard about it. I do want to let everyone know that I will be making a motion after the business of the day is completed to take Senate File 7, Senator Betzel's bill on the Puppy and Kitty Mill bill off the table for discussion. do my bill now? Mr. Chair and committee members, thank you so much. A very easy bill for you this afternoon. This is Senate File 2625. The state of Minnesota already provides an annual park permit to permanently and totally disabled veterans so that they can visit our state's parks with no charge. And this bill simply expands the opportunity also to any veteran with any level of service-connected disability.
Senator Ropes, I see you have a veteran representative on that end of the table. Would he like to add something to this?
Mr. Chair, members, Mike Puglisi, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Veterans Affairs. I just wanted to add that this was shared with the United Veterans Legislative Council and the Commander's Task Force. They're very supportive and thankful for your careful and consideration of this. The department supports this as well.
Any other discussion? Anybody from the audience want to weigh in on this? Senator, what do you want to do to the bill?
Well, Mr. Chair, I would move Senate File 2625 be recommended to pass, and I'm not sure where it goes from here.
Senator Ropes, it'll have to go to the Environment and Natural Resources. That's where it'll have to go because of the parks.
Great. Thank you.
Everybody understand that? All those in favor of the bill, say aye.
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 Opposed? So adopted.
Thank you.
You did him on it.
Ready? Okay. Mr. Chair, I would move that Senate File 7 be taken off the table and the committee discuss the bill.
Senator Ropes moves it. What was the Senate File given?
Seven.
Taken off the table. I don't believe we can have any discussion on a table motion, can we? No. All those in favor of taking it off the table, say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
I would say the noes have it.
Division, Mr. Chair.
Want a division? Okay. All those in favor of the motion to take the bill up off the table for debate, raise your hand. And those against taking it off the table, raise your hand. I guess I did hear right, didn't I?
No, eight in favor.
Oh, these are in favor, okay. You got to excuse me a little bit. I just come from the Judiciary Commission. It takes a while to get settled down.
That'll do it.
Okay. So the bill's before us. I'm going to make a statement right now. We're not going to hear a lot of public testimony. In fact, I probably won't have any, because we already discussed this last year for 3-4 hours. So, Senator Ropes, you can take a few more minutes to explain your bill if you want to.
I believe Senator Betzold's here. I will defer to Senator Betzold, the author of the bill.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Betzold, welcome to committee.
And it's a pleasure to be back. I believe there's going to be handed out a couple of documents for the committee. When we had Senate File 7 before us in January of 2009, we had a number of amendments to the bill adopted by this committee before the bill was tabled. So there is a committee engrossment that is being passed out. that will show you the bill as it was amended by this committee before it was tabled. As you may recall, last spring, we had an amendment based upon our discussions with members of this committee to further amend the bill in ways that we felt that were acceptable to members of this committee. And we prepared then the A18 amendment. Members of this committee were given copies of that amendment at the time. However, when a motion was made to take off the table, that motion did not prevail, so the A18 amendment was not adopted. But I am having passed out to you both the A18 amendment and then a technical amendment, the A19 amendment, which is basically to change the dates of the A18 amendment. Mr. Chair, members, I'm not going to repeat everything. As Mr. Chair, you did not want to have a recitation of it. I will remind you that this is a consumer bill. This is a bill dealing with people. The bad breeders were selling puppies and kittens to Minnesotans. These animals are bred in atrocious conditions, and there's no way to regulate them. There's no way to inspect them. We have many, many good, responsible breeders in the state. We have a number of very bad breeders in the state. People are housing 200, 500 to 1,000 breeding dogs. Just since the end of last session, we've had instances in Senator Stumpf's district where a man and a woman who bred and sold hunting dogs were charged and convicted of 29 counts of animal cruelty. Last January, Senator Ingebrigtsen's district, 51 dogs were seized to a breeder for horrible neglect. They were in a garage and basement of plastic kennels and dilapidated cages. February, 52 dogs and puppies were in Senator Lori's district were seized on an unrelated warrant. They're found 52 starving and neglected dogs and puppies and some dead animals lying around. The situation is there. Now, what this bill does and did was, first of all, to establish a licensing provision so that breeders would be licensed, and then we would use the fees to have inspections. Now, what the A18 amendment did, again, to address the concerns raised by this committee, was that we would, first of all, be self-funding the program, which I indicated we did last year and is already in the bill, and by adopting the A18 amendment would take care of that. We tried to identify what are the standards that the inspectors would have. This committee was concerned about having standards written into law, having rulemaking. We just said, or even having existing USDA standards. We just said existing animal cruelty standards, no federal regulation. So the A18 amendment accomplishes what this committee desired. When we had the bill amended last year, we are trying to set the bar as to what is going to be the minimum threshold for dealing with this. We're not trying to regulate every puppy and kitten in this state. We had proposed last year that somebody who was breeding 6 female animals would apply to. Members of this committee were concerned about that, and so we had a proposal with the A18 amendment, and this was one of the key things that this committee wanted, that it would only apply to people who possess 20 or more intact animals and who they produce more than 5 total litters of puppies or kittens per year. Again, 20. It only applies to 20 or more intact animals and 5 total litters per year. Less than those numbers, the bill would not apply. And for people who currently are USDA breeders, if they're in compliance and cage size, they will continue to be in compliance. If they are out of violation and the violation is corrected, the Board of Animal Health will send a notice. Again, these were issues raised by this committee. This is what's addressed in the A18 amendment. Basically, we would set up a one-time registration fee. We'd also be collecting private donations, and that would take care of it. So, Mr. Chair, members, in order to address the concerns of this committee, as I say, you have the committee engrossment as you table the bill. If you adopted the A18 amendment, this would address the issues you raised last year, as well as then the A19, which is a technical amendment, just to change basically the dates of the A18 amendment. Mr. Chair, members, we've done everything we could to address your issues, and I do stand for any questions.
Did you let them know?
Senator Ropes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Betzel, do you need the A18 amendment moved?
If the A18 amendment would be moved, that would be appreciated, because then that would amend the bill as I have just described it.
And Mr. Chair, I would move the A18 amendment to get it into the shape that this committee directed Senator Betzel to work on last year.
And
the A19 bill as amendment as well.
Would be incorporated.
Everybody understand the motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So adopted. Senator Ropes, where are we at now?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the bill.
Senator Ingebretson.
Could I ask a question of Senator Betzel?
We can ask questions amongst ourselves, but I'm not going to have take any public input because we did that for 3 hours last year.
Right. I just have a question on the bill itself from the author. Question, and you brought up the authorities in my district, Senator Betzel, that had 53 animals.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebretson, the information I had was that in January, in your district, there were 51 dogs seized from a breeder that were in a garage and a basement in plastic kennels and dilapidated cages.
Mr. Chair and Senator Betzel, was there an arrest made?
Mr. Chair and Senator Ingebretson, I don't have that information. We may have somebody who has it. I don't know.
And another follow-up, if I could, Mr. Chair, on line 1.31, the local animal control authority. Could you define the different local animal authorities throughout the state that you can think of, Senator Betzel? I see it's got a state, county, and municipality. I know they're different, rural Minnesota versus suburban metro Minnesota.
Mr. Chair, I've got an expert witness who can answer that question.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Keith Streff, and I'm the senior humane investigator for the Animal Humane Society based in Golden Valley. I'll take your question.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the question is, you're very familiar with your jurisdiction, but who would be the animal control authorities in rural counties where they're obviously very stressed for animal control officers or even humane societies for that matter that sometimes take care of it?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebretson, typically that'll vary from county to county. Some counties do have an appointed a humane investigator per se. If they do not, then that authority is relegated to the a licensed officer within that county of jurisdiction. Sometimes it's an individual a deputy that's working with that local sheriff department. Sometimes it is a contract vendor of which they have a professional animal control authority appointed to handle the animal-related duties within within the spectrum of their county, or it could also could be a designated person from a district humane society of that local community.
Okay, thank you, and continue to follow up. So there is a local animal authority in every county. That's, I think, pretty well established, whether it be the sheriff or a deputy. So in the case of, say, Douglas County, for instance, there are laws on the books now, laws pertaining to animal abuse that obviously were enforced. Is that a fair assumption on my part, being they were seized?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebretson, I think that's a fair assumption within the parameter of the question. However, if there are these statutes that exist and there's effective enforcement, what this particular bill is positioned to do is to correct it before it becomes acute or catastrophic and try and react to it before it gets to be a case where there are 50-some animals that are suffering and are required to be removed by local law enforcement and placing that additional financial burden on that county and the resources that are associated with that seizure.
Senator Ingebretson, do you have a follow-up?
No, not at this time. Thanks.
Senator Chaudhry.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And I'd like to request a roll call on the motion. Just a couple of remarks. I remain opposed to the bill. I agree that this is aimed at consumers. It's my view that this bill would not be good for consumers. I think what this bill will end up doing is only put good breeders out of business. If you look at the standards of 20 animals, that is a fairly normal boarding, training, and breeding kennel facility. And they will now be subject to these licensing and some of these structural requirements. I've maintained, and I still believe that any of these incidents that have been cited show that the system we have now works. The fact that they were caught and something was done about them shows that the system we have now works against bad actors. In the testimony that we heard last year, it was one of the enforcement officers who said that there are bad actors who are small breeders, there are bad actors who are large breeders, and vice versa. And so setting a minimum amount for any potential good breeder and adding increased expense for someone who has done nothing wrong is not appropriate in my point of view. I'd also like to add that I believe it was the facility in Senator Stump's district that was cited that was a quote-unquote puppy mill. That was a USDA-licensed facility, as is being proposed here. So to me, that says that licensure is no guarantee that we will be removing bad actors. I'd also like to mention that there was an incident that was not cited, and that was one in my district where there were a lot of mistreated animals in someone's house. But they were not a breeder. That was simply a hoarder. We have many, many instances of animal cruelty where they don't even involve breeding. This bill does not address those things. I'd just like to finally read one part of Chapter 343, which is our current law, and that deals with our animal cruelty statutes. I think folks will find it really, really interesting. And it goes to the issue of how far we go in treating cruelty to animals versus cruelty to people. Chapter 343.22, Investigation of Cruelty Complaints. Any person who has reason to believe that a violation of this chapter has taken place or is taking place may apply to any court over actions alleging violation of that section for a warrant for investigation. This, I believe, is the only part of our law where any citizen can obtain a warrant for investigation of animal cruelty behavior. And police investigation and search of that place, of that designated warrant, is required with a veterinary doctor. And so we have such strong laws in Minnesota, and I understand that some people believe that because we don't have the state statute doesn't have a licensure law, that somehow our animal cruelty rules are deficient. They're not deficient because we go farther than just licensing. We have strong criminal penalties, and they work. We know that because of the instances that were cited. People have been and are being caught. And so I think that the only result of this bill will be to put good breeders out of business because they will not be able to afford to practice the good breeding that's going on in the state of Minnesota. So I urge members' opposition and renew my call for a roll call.
Senator Chaudhry, then, are we reading the law book, we have the authority now to take care of this situation.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay. Senator Murphy, you're next.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Chaudhry brings up an interesting point, but I just I want people to remember the very first part of what that says. You may petition the court. They don't have to do anything. They don't have to do anything. And last time I checked, our court system was so clogged up with other stuff, they're going to take an animal cruelty case and go, animal cruelty, child brutality. We're taking this one. The animal cruelty will never get heard. I just think that that's great, but we're in a position now where our court systems are so straddled, they're not going to take up animal cruelty laws, and I don't blame them. I wouldn't either if I was a judge sitting on a court. I'd laugh at the person and say, get out of here. I've got 15 divorces to do. I've got 16 kids that were beat up by one spouse or the other. I think there's a higher priority there. And so I just don't believe the courts are going to pay much credence to animal cruelty. My question actually, Mr. Chairman, was to Mr. Michaels. Mr. Michaels, how many more committees does this bill need to go through? Is it like three?
I can answer
three
that.
More?
Three more.
Okay. No. So there's plenty more times to make some changes here. People, I would rather see this apply to everybody, Mr. Chairman, every breeder. But if they're going to put a limit on, that's fine, too.
Senator Deal.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, I'd like to thank Senator Betzel for moving the ball forward and compromising as much as he has. I know he's been working on this a long time. And so I'm guessing that this amendment that we put on is making the bill probably better than it was before. So I'm happy about that. But I'm also interested in hearing what, at some point in the future, what the public really thinks about it and what other breeders and affected people are going to think about it. And my experience has also been that a lot of times when we license somebody, the people that are being licensed are the ones that want it. Veterinary technicians want to be licensed, or wallpaper hangers want to be licensed, and the profession comes in and asks for the licensing themselves. In this case, there are some breeders, of course, that are asking for this licensing and others that are not. And I think it would be appropriate to take this improved product and hold it till next year and allow for Farm Bureau, Farmers Union, other groups that are interested in this to study this a little more clearly. Now, the state of Wisconsin passed a bill just recently, and we had a female veterinarian come over and tell us about it at our veterinary convention in February. And in the Wisconsin law, which I believe she worked on for about 10 years before she got it passed, they did not regulate cats. They're just dogs. And the state of Iowa, I think, just passed a bill recently to regulate, maybe, I don't know if it was dogs and cats, but at least dogs. So the states around us are starting to move in this direction. But I don't like to vote against this because I think it's bad, but I want to vote against it today to delay it for a while so we can get further input from the groups we plan on regulating. And the other factor I think about is we're in a recession, a depression, and I hate to add any more regulation to business right now. It's just not we're kind of in an anti-mandate environment right now. We're trying to provide things that we can do in the legislature to stimulate job growth and stimulate the economy, and more regulations I don't think really moves us in that direction. So I'm glad we took it off the table. I'm glad we had the discussion. But I'd really like to see this bill either put back on the table or not passed today to allow for some more time for the affected people to study it and come back with even a better version for next year.
Any other discussion? Senator Bessel, you have anything more to say?
Mr. Chair, again, this bill is going – the good breeders should welcome this bill. I've said that before, and I said it again. If we can find a way to weed out the bad breeders, it's going to be more business for the good breeders. There's more confidence in there. They have nothing to fear. As I say, this bill does not impose brand-new – requirements on them. If they just follow current law, they should be good to go. The good breeders, as I say, have a lot to gain by this bill. Thank you.
Senator Erickson-Robes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would renew my motion to pass this bill as amended and just remind members that it's going from here to Judiciary where I'm sorry?
Could I send it to the State and Local Government Operations Committee from here if it leaves here?
Okay. Any more discussion? State and local. Okay.
Senator Ropes, you're moving the bill
as amended.
As amended.
To state and local.
Amended. Recommended to pass.
Yes.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Your Honor.
There's a roll call. There was a roll call.
You want a roll call? Okay.
Yep, yep.
Roll call has been asked for. The chair votes no.
Chaudhry?
No.
Yell?
No.
Erickson Ropes?
Yes.
Bobby?
No.
Himsey?
No.
Hahn?
Pass.
Ingebrigtsen?
No.
Boring? Kubli?
Yes.
Langseth?
Yes.
Lori?
Yes.
Murphy?
Aye.
Skoy? Skogan?
No.
The motion fails on a 5-7 vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Mr. Chair.
Senator.
Mr. Chair, I was listening to Senator Dill, and I really do think that we should continue with this discussion on this and at some time in the future probably come up with something that this committee can vote in favor of.
Senator Phoebe.
Mr. Chair and members, if I can just add a few more comments also. This was a really difficult one for all of us, and I think that it would be important. I appreciated Senator Dill's comments. I agree with that, and I also, after having been visited by a number of people in my office, as have all of you, went and called numerous breeders in my area. For those of you who have been in my office, I bred my lab years ago. I had 11 pups, so in our household we had 14 dogs at one time, and we're not breeders. And my good breeders are very concerned about this. And so for me, it's also a PR thing for the people working on this to really educate the good breeders with what's going on, because there's a lot of false information out there, and they're very skeptical, very concerned financially right now, as many people are. So that tells you a little bit about my no vote today. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, thanks. If I could make one comment as well, I think that there isn't really a system out there that is working. I would challenge that. When we listened to the examples, the one that was in my district, I think it was 52 pit bulls, and it wasn't a system that discovered this. They were out there on a drug raid and discovered these 52 pit bulls being treated in a horrendous fashion. I mean, so. There isn't a system that is working. We do need to do something. I don't know if this was the perfect measure. The fact that there were three more committee stops to continue working on this gave me some comfort today, but I do hope that we don't lose sight of the fact that something does need to be done.
Anybody else? Members, I have no more bills, though. So this meeting is adjourned.